I stopped over at a friend's holiday party over the weekend, and at the end of the party, we're sitting with just a few people left in the room. Extremely intelligent, reasonable people. People that I respect for their intelligence. That stated, when presented with a story of trying to understand facts, I was shocked at how unreasonable they would become when the facts started not aligning with what they wanted to hear. They talked over me. They asked questions without me completing my statements. They wanted me to move forward in the story, move backwards in the story. The goalposts kept shifting because the one thing that I've noticed is reasonable people lack the ability at times to be rational. How did we come to be this way? Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee, or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Welcome back, Bold Americans, to another week of episodes. So glad that you're here. Throughout the weekend, there have been many releases on Twitter. More Twitter files are coming. But that is not what I want to focus on today. Today, I want to focus on an interaction that I had at a party between my friends, and they were asking me about my story with John Paul MacIsaac and the Hunter Biden laptop, and they wanted me to point out where was the criminal activity, where were the things that they should be concerned about. And so I tried to set the stage for them and go all the way back to the history of the Bidens and some issues in the Ukraine and why that matters to Burisma. Each time I started a point, I was interrupted by one of the individuals. Some of the feedback that they gave me was legitimate feedback from the standpoint of their insights are certainly valid, but they did not want to listen to me connect each of the stories to the laptop so that way they would have a broad understanding. And it was late, I get it. It was after 1 a.m. in the morning, people had left, and we're sitting around a kitchen table talking about it. But I believe that this is one of the issues that we have as a society in discussing the scientific method for arguing our theories and our approaches. First, it seems that we are quick to label anybody that has a theory about something lately a conspiracy theory. And I believe that that is extremely dangerous because conspiracy theories are something of a term that's used at this point to discredit somebody immediately in terms of credibility in the public. When really the conspiracies or the theories that are presented are oftentimes part of the scientific method, which almost all of the academic community would say that is a great way to approach journalism. That is a great way to approach continuing to ask questions. So we're going to go over the scientific method today. We're also going to talk about trust, because some people will trust me because I'm on a network. And so you hear my voice and you go, you know what? Greg seems pretty well balanced. I trust him. Other people will not have that trust until they see that there's some type of groupthink. They'll look at my follower count and go, well, that person doesn't have enough followers in order to be trusted. I need more credibility from that groupthink. I need more confidence in what's supposed to be said. And then there is the last part of it that's really governance-based, because it governs the way that we all trust and behave. And if I'm talking about things like that, you go there. So my show is more of a vulnerable-based trust. You'll hear me at times say, oh, I got that wrong, or I'll bring on somebody like Paul Engel last week who explains to me that, look, the First Amendment has not been violated by any proof at this point, and you've been saying that it has been, and I don't think that that is an accurate assessment, and I own it. I say, okay, that's great. So I think I'm establishing vulnerability-based trust with my listeners. That's probably where I rely most. But when I'm with my friends that have known me for a long time, they know that I'm consistent. They know what my principles are, that I try to live an ethical and moral life. I'm curious, why will they not listen to that same open mind? What have they dug into? So we need to talk about the scientific method, the levels of trust today. and conspiracy theories. So that's kind of the three things that I want to expand upon. And I would love for you to reach back out to me. You can go to greg@americaemboldened.com. You can send an email there and let me know your thoughts, or reach out on Twitter @realgregbolden.com. Happy to start there. All right. So first and foremost, I'm using the Hunter Biden laptop for a few different reasons. One, it was one of my most popular shows early on. Interviewed John Paul MacIsaac, got the details and the timeline, and I still get people that say, but how do you know that what he was telling you and what you were provided is real and wasn't doctored, wasn't manipulated in any way, shape, or form? And I point them now to all the legitimate news sites that are now telling us that it was verified that there was no tampering whatsoever. And you can go to the CBS News to be able to read that story. In fact, I believe it was on November 21st, they ran a story, copy of what's believed to be Hunter Biden's laptop data turned over by repair shop to FBI showed no tampering, analysis says. Now, there are going to be two different types of individuals. They read this. The first person's going to go, well, this is CBS News. This is a trusted news source. I trust this, and therefore, I'm going to read through and go, yeah, that was a verified copy of the laptop. Other people are going to look at this and go, yeah, but who did they have verify this? What type of forensic analysts did they bring in? So the independent analysis that was run, according to this study, was two cyber investigators from a Minneapolis-based computer forensic service. And they found no evidence whatsoever that user data had been modified, fabricated, or tampered with, nor did it find that there were any new files originating after April 2019 when John Paul MacIsaac said that Hunter Biden walked in with this laptop for repair. So the digital forensic analysis was taken because there are people that are saying right now, well, where's the criminal charges? Now, many people have asked me a question, and I've alluded this question over time. And I'm going to continue to allude this question. You can read into it by the fact that I'm alluding to it. Here's what you need to know about the laptop, okay? And then I'll get straight to the point. The laptop has over 120,000 emails, 30,000 text messages, and then numerous pictures, video, lots of personal forms of identification that had been saved, the personal voicemails from that profile, because when you link your iCloud and your laptop, that stuff automatically gets saved when you're connected. So there was really no doubt from the investigators and no doubt from what I know about that this was real and verified. And I think that's very important to kind of point out and make sure that people know. That stated, you can choose to believe me on this or you can choose not to believe me. Now, if I start telling you what's on the laptop, all right, then the next question that you're going to ask me is, well, have you personally seen the laptop, or how are you getting your information? Rather than simply saying, I've earned your trust and I'm telling you the truth, or whatever news source that you get. It's that same concept of, well, are you positive? Was this verified? Okay, so we can agree, hopefully, that this thing's been verified at this point, that John Paul MacIsaac has a verified copy. Now, what is on the laptop? You've probably noticed I have not talked about it on my shows. The reason I've chosen not to speak about this is because I believe anybody who would like to learn more about what's on the laptop, there is plenty of information available online, but I will tell you, buyer beware. Do not go searching this stuff out, not knowing what you're going to find. The reason I say that is I believe that those individuals that are searching through Hunter Biden's laptop are in possession of things that could violate laws. And when I say that, I'm not going any further other than to state that if there's going to be criminal charges pressed, I know some of the laws might say other people viewing this material could possibly open them up to criminal charges. So as a result, I don't recommend this. Rely on the other experts. Trust. So what are the criminal things that I'm at least aware of? All right. So I'm going to put the words allegedly in front of my statement today. The things that I'm allegedly aware of are the fact that there is a possibility from these 120,000 emails that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's brother, and Joe Biden were working on deals while Joe Biden was vice president and using his office as vice president in order to financially benefit the family. Now, is that criminal? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But here's the problem. When people say, well, okay, can you tell me how that would be criminal? And I link it to Burisma. I stated to my friend just a few hours ago. I said, look, I know for a fact that if you follow the trail, that Hunter was receiving about $1 million from Burisma. To which the person said, but that's not even a lot of money. That's not even something that's like worthwhile getting upset about. This is the problem with that. This is the reason why I believe we need to look at the scientific method, which I'm going to get into this show. You have to ask yourself a question, not about how much money it was, but whether or not the Bidens are compromised in any way, shape, or form, just as we ask the question, is Donald Trump compromised by Russia? There's a huge investigation for that, correct? We looked into it. We saw where there was evidence. We're still looking into the evidence of his relationship with Huawei in South Korea, owing $20 million. Now, is $20 million not a lot of money to a billionaire? No, it's not. But it shows that there could possibly be criminality, allegedly, or a conflict of interest that would possibly harm our national security and be holding our president to another foreign special interest over the Constitution that they swore to uphold and protect. Now, I'm asking these questions from what I know of the laptop because of the scientific method. So the first step in the scientific method is we make an observation, right? Now, there are some people that don't want to make the observation on this thing. They just want to say, well, I'm sure Hunter Biden's a horrible person, but what's that have to do with Joe Biden? Well, that gets to the second part of the scientific method when we ask a question. So the question that we ask for it is, well, what does it have to do with Joe Biden and does it have to do with him? If somebody is a drug addict and not somebody who's the most trusted person because they've lost weapons repeatedly, as we can see through the state of Delaware, that has been something that's been verified through interviews, first source on my show, as well as part of an FBI investigation right now. So I'll ask this question, why would Joe Biden trust Hunter Biden in order to broker these deals in China and the Ukraine and possibly other places? Again, I'm alleging and asking a question after I make the observation. Now I'm going to form a hypothesis, step number three. And this is where we get our testable explanation. So the hypothesis that I was forming in this was, okay, Hunter Biden has $1 million coming in from Burisma. Joe Biden is going to withhold $1 billion from Burisma unless they fire the investigator who's going to investigate that company. And then the company does it. And that sounds a lot like quid pro quo to me. And the fact that Joe Biden was protecting his interests in this country or in this company, just as maybe in the country as well of Ukraine. And so my prediction based on that hypothesis would be quid pro quo was directly related to Hunter Biden. And as a result, I get to my next step. Step number five, I test the prediction. Now, I can test the prediction by going through the emails and finding out, can we verify who set up these relationships? And guess what? We can. And then my final step is I use those results to make a new hypothesis or a new set of predictions. This is where the news media is largely and vaguely silent and abhorrently deficient in their efforts to talk about this story. This is the reason why people say this is right-wing media that's obsessed with the Hunter Biden laptop, but meanwhile, don't look in the mirror to realize that they were using the same scientific method to go after Trump for many, many years and continue to use it. it's okay to do it the both, right? It's actually healthy to go through the scientific method in order to make sure that we have all of the details necessary in order to evaluate things. Now, this gets further complicated when we look at the Twitter files and what we learned last week and what we're still learning throughout the weekend about how the intelligence community seems tied in to Twitter, which means they're also tied into other social media companies. We now know that John Podesta's niece, that's right, the same John Podesta with Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee, we know that his niece was working at Twitter in a high-up part of trust and making sure that child safety was observed. We also know Jim Baker, which I did a show on last week, former FBI general counsel, was counseling Twitter and was tampering with the files before they were released to the public. And as a result, he was exited from Twitter. We now know that part of the people in trust and what was able to be verified as proper information was Anthony Fauci's granddaughter. We're getting all of this information, and it just seems like the intelligence community, the government, they were placing people. There's also another person. I don't have the name on the top of my head, but they had served in the FBI for 21 years and were serving in Twitter. But I don't have that because I didn't want to make this about the Twitter files. I want to make this about that kitchen table over the weekend and why people would not listen to the scientific method and instead went straight into their silo and said, my side, no, we're okay. Nope, there isn't a problem on this. Or they would say, well, you know, I think you're mislabeling. We don't like Nancy Pelosi. We don't like Joe Biden. We want better candidates. We're more progressive than that. I think we're in a dangerous spot on trust. And so we're going to continue the talk more about why it's important to have theories and not just label people as aluminum foil hat wearing conspiracy theorist on the other side of the break. All right. And I also want to just let everybody know that I'm seeing that the flu, it's getting worse throughout the country. This is around the time of year when we're all going to gather in people's homes. And as we do so, we're going to be around people that are sick. And there is a great product that we have here on the America Out Loud Network. You hear the commercials. I own one. It's called the Genesis Fogger, the Genesis HOCL Fogger. It's awesome. You distill water, put it in with the HOCL fluid, and it is completely non-toxic. You don't have to wear a mask. It's completely safe for your pets, for your children. It works on the same biological way that your red blood cells work. This stuff kills all the viruses in your home. It kills COVID. It kills the flu, as well as molds. It's just a really awesome product. And you can pick one up at genesisfogger.com/outloud, and you get a discount on that purchase today. It'll help keep your family safe and healthy. All right, everybody, you're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Be right back.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, my bold Americans. We are talking about trust, the scientific method, and why people are shutting down, whether you are a conservative not listening to some of the left's talking points, or you're on the left and not listening to the right's talking points. It's a bad place to be when we do not trust one another or are willing to listen to one another, instead immediately say, well, that person is a conspiracy theorist. Now, the definition of a conspiracy theory is a theory asserting that there's a secret of great importance being kept from the public. Now, what is ironic is when over and over the conspiracy theories that have been labeled conspiracy theories keep coming true. Now, when they keep coming true, most people don't pay attention to the fact that it is now something that's true. They double down on the inaccurate truth, the erroneous truth that they should know at that point in time. Why? Why is it that once somebody is faced with the truth, they become irrational about it? Well, we can go back to a 1975 study at Stanford University. Stanford had a study where they had two different groups of individuals, and they presented them with suicide notes, half of which were real and half of which were made up and fake. The students needed to distinguish between which of the notes were the real ones and which of the notes were the fake ones. Here's where it gets interesting. The first group found out that they did extremely well when Stanford gave them the results. Out of 25 pairs of notes, they identified the real one 24 times. The other group found out that they were horrible at it. Out of 25 notes, pairs of notes, they only identified it in 10 instances. So the individuals in the first group that were like, wow, we did a great job, look how well we did it, they felt, wow, we're really good at locating this. But because this was a study in psychology, that was not the actual truth of what was being told to them. So, sure, half the notes were genuine. They were obtained from an LA County coroner's office, but the other half were completely made up. But here's the best part. The students that were told that 24 out of 25 they had accurately predicted, they were lied to. They did not accurately predict them. What they wanted to do was find out if they would double down on their belief because they felt that they were correct. And so in the second phase of the study, Stanford told the students that the real point of this experiment was to gauge the response as to how they think they were right or wrong. And so the students are like, oh, okay, well, let's go more. So this also was a lie. That was not the point of the exercise. This is like a 4D chess move, Stanford University. Brilliant study in 75. You can look this up. So finally, the students were asked to estimate how many suicide notes they had actually categorized correctly, because they had not been given the proper amount yet, and how many they thought an average student should be able to get right. And this is where things get interesting and how it's applicable to the arguments that we're having in society right now. The students that were originally told that they got 24 out of 25 correct and thought that they did really well, much better than everybody else, even though they were just told there were zero grounds for believing this, the conspiracy theory was debunked, those individuals continued to believe that their impressions were more important than the group that didn't do as well. They continued to believe that they did better than the other group, even though they were lied to on the first part of the study on purpose, and the second part about telling it was the truth on purpose to try to get them to see if we could figure out if it was part of the human condition. Now, this study has been done over and over again in different forms and formats. And what we find is people always fail to make the appropriate revision to the belief once it's proven true. So if we can label something as a conspiracy theory, if we can convince somebody that that is crazy talk, that's crazy town, or with the buzzword I'm seeing right now on Twitter files, that's a big nothing burger. If you can get people to believe that, guess what? The damage is already done. These Stanford studies are famous now. You can go back into the 1970s. You can find these now. And it tells us a lot about 2022 and 2020 with COVID. Which I believe this is the problem with irrational thought and reasoning. This is the reason why I'm sitting in that kitchen late at night having this conversation. I'm standing there going, here's the scientific method. Here's the truth of what I know. I'm not making it up. I'm trying to be trustworthy here and just sharing the facts and details. But the other individuals that had their mind made up, that they know how everything is going right now, I had no shot whatsoever in convincing them of anything. And we can see it because of these studies in human psychology. There is no way we can get people. You either have the ability to escape and start asking questions, or you do not have that ability. It is a part of an adaptation that we have evolved from to survive. So they say that reason is an adaptation to the hypersocial niche humans have evolved for themselves. Okay. That they are habits of the mind. They could be something that some people believe that they're intellectualist. They believe that their intellect is superior to others. And that oftentimes comes with what's called confirmation bias. If you believe that you are more intelligent than another set or subset of humans, then you're more likely to fall for your own confirmation bias when you find something. If your intellect is also lacking in an area, and as a result, you spent your life trusting other people and have a higher level of trust, you will also fall for confirmation bias. Because in that fact, you want to have groupthink. You want to fit in. And so we find ourselves in our silos. And both sides, the left and right, have silos. There is crazy talk, oftentimes, on both sides of the equation. That's not to say that the people in the middle are correct either. Sometimes the people in the middle don't want to be bothered with the truth on the right or the left. They refuse to look at it. And they just want to live their lives. This is dangerous as well because this allows for people to stay in those silos without being challenged. And if you're still listening, then you probably understand America Emboldened a lot better through this lens. The whole point of this entire show, the reason I dedicate Monday through Friday every single week, is to ask questions that maybe some would say, wow, this is something that's a little bit out there. You're going into a little crazy town. I'm simply asking the scientific method of questions to try to find out, is there a larger truth or not? And I don't think that that's a problem. This also goes back to why I believe people get upset. Some people, not all, get upset when I go into the COVID conversation. I see COVID as something that was both dangerous as well as something that I do not trust as far as whatever the official narrative is. I continue to use the scientific method to find studies, to find research that shows that this thing was created in a lab. And that's absolutely something that can be almost 100% verified at this point. But why is that not in the mainstream news? How come that isn't public knowledge with everybody that there are scientists who have now stated with a 99.9% accuracy that COVID was created in a lab because they can figure out where the insertion points were in order to write this gain of function. But you don't see that because, as we know about the human condition, the people that believe that they were right at the beginning are continuing to shout down. Now, this is a dangerous place to be in society because eventually, when you have two ideologies, one that refuses to see the other sides, there can be no resolve outside of conflict. And I believe the conflict is brewing. Conflict's brewing in a horrible way, and I don't want conflict. I want to people to open their minds. But what I'm starting to realize, I don't think that that is possible. I don't think people have the capacity in order to open their minds. So I'm going to give you levels of trust. I talked about this at the top of the show. Now we're going to get into it a little bit further. Because I'm curious, what is your level of trust with my show and with your friendships? So the first is the most basic level of trust in psychology. All right. And that's the trust that you have in law, policies, procedures, and contract. So there's a quote that kind of sums governance and rules-based trust. It says, "I know you will follow the rules and it governs our behavior with each other." So when you sign a contract of terms of agreement that you're getting, it's basically saying, "I know you're going to perform this work and these are the rules that I can expect to protect me as well as what's going to protect you." And so when you renew your license with your insurance provider, all right, you're going to trust that the fees that they're charging you are correct. Most people aren't going to continue to look at all the different legalese of what they're signing. Sure, some people do that, but there's a level of trust. Many people, when they signed on the social media companies, there was a huge document. Most people scroll as fast as they can down to the bottom, hit OK, and they don't really question what they just signed. That's not everybody. There are some people that question. There are some people that then go into the scientific method. Well, why is this the way it is? That's the whole reason that TikTok is a big story right now. When you look at their terms of agreement, you realize it's highly invasive into your life. Most people wouldn't use TikTok if they truly understood it. The next level of trust is one that is kind of your day-to-day trust. It's the experience and confidence-based trust. So when you work at a corporation or any really working environment that has a hierarchy, there's trust that comes from the top on down. And that's the professional trust. And then some people build that trust because they become a valuable team member at their workplace and eventually people look to them. And so you demonstrate trust to other people at that point. So there's the contracted trust, and then there is the trust that we demonstrate. So this could be, you know, you continue to show up early each day at the meetings that you have. You're offering really great points. Eventually, people are going to go, you know what? That guy over there or that young lady over there, what a great job. They're going to trust you, and they're going to go to you the next time they need something. And then the final part is this vulnerability-based trust. This is the trust that I aim for my audience. Now, this level of trust is one where you have to truly connect with other people. And I'm trying to connect with my audience. Anyone who has ever sent me a message through Twitter, anyone who's ever emailed me, I guarantee you've gotten a response back if it came through my mailbox. Why? Because I want that type of relationship between my show and you. You're taking the time to listen to the content that I put out. I want to take the time and honor your time back and have a conversation with you. I understand that the show has grown. It's getting exponentially larger, and I may not be able to write back the 5 paragraphs that I used to write back to people, but I will still take the time as long as I'm physically capable of doing it. I have enough hours in the day to respond to every single person and to give feedback. That is part of vulnerability-based trust when you establish a relationship with somebody else. And then you personally get to understand one another, right? So there are people that are like, you know, Lefty Lehman, when he comes onto your show, I don't like that guy. Okay, I'm fine with you not liking that guy. But here's the thing. I personally know him. He is past my vulnerability-based trust based upon the fact I've known him since college. And the fact that he listens to the show daily, gives me feedback daily, you know, if you understood that side, you would listen to him a little bit more because you'd understand he is investing. This isn't somebody who's being ignorant. So I have a lot of respect there. So with this level of trust, it becomes vulnerable. It also allows us to say, I was wrong. It allows us to say, you know what? I'm in a space here right now where I can admit my faults. I can admit that I had a bad take. And tomorrow, I'm not concerned about whether or not people are going to show up because I've earned that trust of my listeners or I've earned that trust in my workplace. And that's a great way to be because it earns respect and value. You know, I'm not saying that you always have to fall on a sword to fix things if you don't really need to fall on a sword. I am stating if you violate somebody's trust or you misstate something, you should correct it. It's important to correct it. So how do we get other individuals around us? Doesn't matter if you consider them far right or far left. How do we get other individuals to have dialogue and trust with one another to the point where we have two ears and one mouth, listen twice as hard as we speak, so we can understand what's being stated? Can we have some more patience with people? Do we have to shout out that the vaccines are safe and effective and that you had a choice to be vaccinated and you suffer with your choices that you don't get to go to the restaurants, instead of, tell me more about your observation. Tell me more about the questions you're asking about why you chose not to be vaccinated. Tell me more about your hypothesis. How have you tested this? What evidence have you seen in the world, and what are you predicting may happen? Have you tested that prediction? Have you now seen results that the vaccine has not been safe to individuals? And then what can we deduce from that? Instead of deleting people off Twitter as disinformation, instead of saying, well, that person's a conspiracy theorist, if we listen to one another, we'd be a much more well-informed society. Because I promise you, if there's one thing we're learning from the Twitter files, it's this, that we are certainly being only subjected to certain parts of information that is amplified into our silo. Social media is echo chambers by the mere fact of you choose who you want to follow, who you align with. And then if they're going to de-amplify some of those voices and amplify others, it's also going to change the way you perceive things. So be careful what you consume, because you become exactly what you consume as well. And so I don't know how we have this conversation, but I can tell you this. My shows this week, my guest tomorrow that I'll have on, is going to be somebody who has been labeled as pseudoscience and somebody who has been labeled as disinformation. I'm aware of that going into the interview. I'm okay with it because this person is using the scientific method to hypothesize on what they believe is going to happen on an Earth catastrophe cycle. And most of you may not be aware of it. The show will be for informational purposes should you want to listen to an alternate version of what's happening with our climate, an alternate version with what happens to our society and our Earth about every 12,000 years, according to this individual. You're going to want to tune in. I'm also going to have a doctor on later this week that has left as a pediatrician so they can talk more openly about what they know about the COVID vaccines and the healthcare system. And I'm going to have him on. He's one of the most respected doctors in his industry. And I cannot wait to bring you his voice later this week. It's going to be a great week of shows, but I just ask that we just trust with an open ear, as I know that we do, and move forward together. That's all I have for you today. I hope I had a great start to your week. I thank you all for tuning in and being attentive listeners, and I hope I honored that time well. Once again, reach out on Twitter at RealGregBolden, B-O-U-L-D-E-N. Give the show a follow. Hit the little follow button and the alert button for when I post. Love staying engaged with you guys. That's it. You've been listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Be bold, America.